And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, what's going on? Good morning. How are you?
Good. Move-in day. So,
oh boy.
Ready for that. Kind of, maybe, or not.
It's a big day. Big day in the house of Rex Road. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Guys, doing great this morning. You know, we got football this weekend, and I have a pumpkin coffee right now, so I'm in full fall mode. I'm so excited. It's my favorite season.
Do they already have those out?
Oh, heck yeah, they do. It came out at Dunkin' last week and Starbucks this week, so we love that.
So are people, like, all over the pumpkin coffee stuff when it's still, you know, 93 degrees outside?
Absolutely. At least I am. Okay. As soon all as right. it comes out, that is my coffee order until further notice.
Okay.
It's like a puddle of orange. It's so
wrong.
Hot out still.
No.
So, but I can't, because I'm not a huge pumpkin. I mean, I like one here and there. You know, I'm not a huge lover of those. But I mean, I'm already buying Oktoberfest, so it's the same kind of idea, right? Like, it should probably be like October 1st.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything's like that, right? And Christmas decorations go up in October, et cetera, et cetera. We've complained about that.
Oh yes, we certainly have. So are you gonna be all right throughout the show today? Like, it's a big day for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's gonna be absolute chaos going on around me as two cars get packed up with a lot of stuff. And so the amount of help I'm providing is limited, which is not great. But, you know, I may show up just a couple seconds late after some commercial break. So, you know, if so, just yell into the computer and I'll come back.
See what happens on that front. Joe, today is a big day. I don't know if you know this or not, but officially, hopefully, if there's any control over it whatsoever by my plans, last night was the final night that I have to watch Jordan Love play football for this season. If things go to plan.
Well, I know that last time out he played pretty well. Was he bad last night?
He's all right.
Okay.
He threw a really bad interception. But he's all right. But, you know, there's still quite a difference from QB1 to QB2, if you know what I'm talking about. Quite a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is he ever actually going to have a real, like, is there a chance that he's going to be QB1 ever?
I mean, I guess there's a chance, but the thing is, he's a first-round pick. This is his third year. Rodgers right. just signed a four-year deal. He's probably not going to play all four of them, but I bet he plays at least two. So that means you're going to have to make a decision
on an option,
whether or not to pick up an option without ever having seen him start a game at quarterback. It's a tough one.
I mean, it's somewhat clear, right, at this point that they thought more of him than he was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Jordan Love. No harm done. Got the first round contract, you know, and he'll get a chance somewhere, I would imagine.
I would think. I mean, he's gotten better. I don't know what that means moving forward, but he's certainly gotten better. So we'll see what happens on that front. There is a preseason game for the Titans this weekend as well. Let's just start there on quarterback. What do you think happens at quarterback in this game for the Titans against Arizona? Is it going to be the Malik Willis show the whole time, which is going to really be his last chance to have in-game competition, you would think, for the most part this year, unless something has gone horribly wrong? Or are they going to, you know, split it up between he and Woodside? What do you think happens in this game coming up between the Titans and the Cardinals?
It's a great question, and I would answer it with a question. What does it mean either way? Because yeah. you could still interpret things differently there too. Like, to me, and I could be reading it wrong, but like, if Malik Willis gets this whole game, I will take that as, yeah, Woodside's QB2. You know, and he's just, they don't feel great about it. I mean, that's just me. That's my interjection. You know, he hasn't had a great camp. You could do better at QB2. And again, remember, Tuesday, a lot of things can change on a lot of rosters. A lot of things will change on a lot of rosters, and it's possible the Titans could have a different QB2 to pick up. But if it's all Willis's game, you know, then that I would take that as they're just using this game to do what you just said, like take your last chance and get as many snaps as you can, get as much out of this experience as you can, and understand that there's a whole bunch of work ahead of you. If Woodside gets like half the game, I start to wonder if they're actually considering Willis as QB2. Maybe I'm looking at that wrong, but that's kind of how I look at it.
Well, look, if they feel confident about Woodside as QB2, which again, I think a lot of fans hear that and they think, well, how in the world could you feel confident about Logan Woodside as the backup quarterback right now based on the way that he's played thus far in the preseason? And I get that. I also know that they really like Logan Woodside, and they've been glowing about Logan Woodside for the most part over the last couple of years. You know, maybe they view him a little bit differently than we do at this point, and they just are convinced that he's their guy, and hopefully they never have to use him like they haven't had to the last couple of years. So I think that very well could be within the realm of possibility. I agree. Like, I think if he plays half the game, I think they could really be taking a look at this competition. Now, the problem with that is if he is going to be the backup quarterback, selfishly for me, I'd still like to see him play half the game, because at some point you need to play well, and he's not played well in a game thus far this preseason. So I think it's important for him to play either way. I'm not sure that they would agree with my assessment there, just the kind of the way I view this heading into this game.
Yeah, and that's the problem here, is that obviously the information that we all get, well, there's three levels of it. There's you know, fans who have seen the two preseason games, and if that's all you've got on Logan Woodside, you know, in the last year, then you're down on him. I totally get it. And then those of us who go to practice see a lot more, and it is often better. Although, again, it's weird how, like, after the preseason game, I swear he had a really bad week after that. But it has been a lot better. And then, of course, the coaches have so much more information on top of that, you know, and how they evaluate things, but also in the building and all that stuff. So I think he's going to be QB2. I think that, you know, the plan will be with Woodside, just like we kind of talked about all along. You know, that basically he's going to do this year, he's going to do a fair amount of scout team for the Titans. And in some weeks, that'll be especially helpful. And then it's just going to be a learning year. And they're just going to be screwed if Ryan Tannehill gets hurt. Like most teams in the NFL are screwed when their starting quarterback gets hurt. I would be open to bringing someone in. But if you bring someone after cuts, you better be really – to me, it's got to be a quarterback who is very familiar with this offense, doesn't it?
You think so. I mean, you can't just come in and – I mean, I guess you could, but the idea of bringing somebody in would be for them to be ready to play against the Giants, right, in case they need to.
Yeah, exactly. So it's possible. The Blaine Gabbert idea, because, you know, technically this is the same offense that he was in 2018, you know, playing in the winning end game against the Colts at the end of the year and all year. At times he had to play. I mean, he had to play in week two and got a huge win over the Texans. That would – if the Bucs are like Trask is, you know, QB2 and we in the future and they cut Gabbert, I would be okay with the Titans signing Gabbert and dispatching Woodside. I mean, I think that's an upgrade.
Yeah.
Short of that, I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody out there, you know, who would be all that appealing. So, and again, if that's also in the mindset of John Robinson, I guess to me, I'd give Willis the whole game.
Well, see, I would say this, like, if that's the mindset of John Robinson, I agree. If it's not, I want Logan Woodside to start. Like, I want him out there with the best players that are going to play in this game. I have no clue how many starters are going to play. I don't know if Lawan's going to be out there at all. I would think Petit Frere is going to be out there a pretty good amount. I don't know what the starting offensive line is going to look like in this game against Arizona. But, you know, Woodside's come in both games in the second half. I'd like to see him start this game and be out there with the quote-unquote better players and see what he looks like then. I don't think that's what they'll do, but that's what I would like to see if they're going to play Woodside in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because that is one thing to keep in mind with Woodside, is that he has been coming in late. He's been coming in not even at halftime, but into the second halves of these games. And, you know, I hear people when they're like, well, he's going against threes and fours on D, and that's true. But who made the point? Was it on our show? Who made the point yesterday about the difference between threes and fours pass rushers and threes and fours offense? Was it Kaharski this week?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great point, and I think that would be a really interesting case study across the league. Go look at every team's roster and compare, like, their number three, you know, outside linebacker / defensive end, whatever their defense is, pass rusher, to, like, their number three offensive tackle. Go to number four. I mean, like there's a problem in this league finding enough good offensive linemen. You know, it's a league-wide thing, and there are a lot more people who can beat those guys. So, you know, you come in late in a game, and I mean, I think Woodside, not making excuses for him, because he's had time on some throws that you just can't throw. You can't make those throws. They're bad, but he has had guys in his face. So if you really do want to see Woodside, if the coaches actually look at this like, man, this, we need this evaluation for Woodside, I'm not sure about Logan, like, we got to put him under some pressure and see how he reacts, then I would agree, start him. I think it's going to be Willis, and I think it's going to be Willis the whole game, and I think Woodside's going to be QB2, pending Tuesday's roster cuts.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Look around at some position battles that could come down to this game for the Titans against Arizona coming up next. By the way, a couple people on the text line pointing out Davis Mills looking okay last night. Wes in Clarksville said Davis Mills last night looked good. I think he's going to make an MVP run, LOL. Rainey on the text line says Packers need to give up multiple first rounders for Davis Mills. Ooh. People are starting to catch on, Joe Rexroad. That's one that we were first.
It seems like a little bit of a stretch to me, but I mean, hey, you know, he's getting it done, man.
It's impossible to overestimate what we've seen from Davis Mills thus far. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Aside from any numbers, results, or anything, what have you seen Malik improve on over the last 2.5 weeks or so, now that he's got a couple of games under his belt?
Well, we talked about, you know, there was times that, you know, we never want him to be a sitting duck, but there's also a progression. I've seen him work through his progression. I've seen him improve his timing. And then I've seen him, you know, being able to slide up in the pocket. You know, he hit Hassan when he slid up, and then he slid up and was able to attack the defense. And that's where you can make a lot of damage, you know, in this league. And then if you go out, you know, the back of the pocket, you know, using numerous quarterbacks as an example, but Josh Allen's made a living, you know, going out and making plays out of the pocket and throwing the ball downfield and keeping his eyes downfield. But there's also a time to get in and break it down a defense and then make sure that you're, you know, protecting yourself and the equipment.
That was Mike Vrabel on Malik Willis and the progression that he's seen from him thus far during training camp. Going to be interesting to see how Malik Willis plays coming up on Saturday against Arizona. So, Joe, we've talked about the quarterback position and what our expectations are there coming up on Saturday. What about the rest of the team? I mean, this is always an interesting point to me to get to in the preseason, because training camp, as of yesterday, is kind of essentially over at this point. And now you've got this final evaluation period with the preseason game coming up tomorrow. And I always wonder, like, how many actual decisions and roster spots actually come down to this last game tomorrow? I mean, I think there are some that have happened throughout the course of the history of the Titans or any team you want to throw out there. I think a lot of them are probably already decided at this point. But as you look at this team, and as you look at some of these different position groups that we've talked about this week, are there any that stand out to you as to some maybe position battles, be that starter or be that, you know, depth, that could actually come down to tomorrow's game for the Titans against Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more on the depth side of things. It's probably more bottom of the roster. Yeah, they've made these moves at safety. So what's the safety group? And some of these are questions that can't be answered in a game, because we don't know, like, injury status of some people, duration of certain injuries. Like that safety position is one example. We know that like Monty Rice is on PUP, so he's missing the first four games. I mean, there's a spot. How many of those guys are making the team? I think it's more bottom of the roster stuff. How many linebackers versus how many receivers? Okay, three quarterbacks. So where does that get taken out of? Eight offensive linemen, nine offensive linemen. There's a lot of defensive linemen who could make this team at this point based on, I mean, DeMarcus Walker, I feel like, has gotten tremendous opportunities, but Deshaun Hand has also done good things. You know, I think Naquan Jones and Tyre Tart, you know, those guys are in, I think. I think Laurel Murchison's probably out based on what I'm seeing, what I've seen with reps and everything. You could keep that as a tight group and just your main guys, or you could really be like, you know, there's a couple of these guys that we really need for depth. And that totally changed the picture. As far as the higher end, I think you're right that Petit Frere probably plays a decent amount, I guess. Who knows with this game? This is obviously the same thing as the fourth game, and in some of these games, Vrabel has very much not played many people at all. But I would think Petit Frere would get out there. Are the corners going to get out there and play a lot again in this game? I don't know, but... And how much does this one game against what I would assume would also be a whole bunch of backups mean in that situation? Because I just still think that Farley and McCreary are probably realistically like co-starters at this point. But who knows with Molden, right? And then maybe McCreary's in there. And then there's the punting situation. Is it telling, does it mean anything that now Kern goes back to holding? Does that mean they've gotten their look and it's like, okay, it's just back to Brett Kern? Or is that an active, you know, just straight up competition right now, and they need to see both of them Saturday night?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I would assume Dylan Radins is probably going to play a lot in this game as well. Is he going to play at guard? Like, is he going to be the backup guard? Do they trust somebody else to be the backup guard? Are they going to cut Dylan Radins next week? I mean, I would assume he's going to play a whole lot in this game coming up against Arizona.
Yeah, and if you're him, you have to look at it like you're playing for a job. But where do they put him then? So if it's basically over at right tackle and they're going with the rookie, does that mean that they need to, like, you know, Aaron Brewer is the left guard of this team. So does Brewer get the night off and Raiden starts at left guard? And like, let's see what you can do. I could see that.
I could see that too.
See if he can at least be like your third guy there. It's just obviously to me, people who are on the field at this point, in some of these cases, you get down to this game and it's like, you got to fill the football time, right? Like, go out there. And, you know, Vrabel talks about this all the time. You're providing opportunities to these guys too. You know, some of these guys who you aren't really evaluating anymore, you know they're not making the team. I think Vrabel knows what it's like to go through this stuff. He's been he's been this guy. So, he's talked about that, and I think he takes it very seriously. Like, let him put a quarter on tape and see what he can do. And maybe it'll catch somebody's eye. You know, a lot of these guys are just trying to stay in the league and get a job somewhere.
For sure. And then there's the receiver room as well, with five spots you would think being pretty much wrapped up at this point. Number one, how are the Titans viewing that room as to how many they're going to keep? And number two, if they're keeping six, who's that sixth guy? Like, we keep talking about Des Fitzpatrick. Is he for sure the sixth guy? Is there somebody else that could come in and steal that spot from him? Like, there's not a whole lot left to figure out with receivers at this point, I don't think. But if they're keeping six, who is that final spot going to go to? And is it Des Fitzpatrick's spot to lose at this point? And how much is one game going to change that?
Right. Yeah. Obviously Godwin, they've moved on there. Malone, they moved on there. So, And those were two guys that I would have said. You could look at I mean, you know, Cody Hollister is still always around, man. He's always around. Hey, Mason Kinsey has had a really good camp. I mean, he really has. But I would think Dez would get it. If they're going to keep a six, that it would be Dez. You know, Robertson has been pretty good too, but he, you know, the rookie unsigned or undrafted rookie out of SMU. I mean, he's been pretty good. People thought he would be pretty good, and he was. I would think Dez by a nose over him if there's a six receiver. I could see that position possibly being sacrificed and just go with five and a couple of those guys on the practice squad. So, but I think it would be Dez. I don't know. Hollister is interesting. I mean, he just, like, they trust him a ton and all that, and he's had a good camp.
Got great hair.
He does have terrific hair. So that you got to factor that in too. I think it would be Dez. And a tight end too. Like, I think Hudson becomes the fourth tight end. I think that's what will happen. David Wells has been getting a lot of opportunity lately, but I think Hudson would be the guy as the fourth tight end. But are they definitely keeping four tight ends?
It's a great question. And then there's, real quickly, Joe, this final question of, if you're keeping three quarterbacks, which position ultimately is going to be the one that ends up being sacrificed if you're keeping the three quarterbacks? And I guess going back to the Woodside discussion, what are the chances the Titans maybe taking their chances and trying to sneak Logan Woodside through to the practice squad and still having him there? I mean, obviously somebody would pick up Malik Willis. I don't know 100% that somebody would pick up Logan Woodside.
Yeah, no, and that's possible too. And I don't think anybody would pick him up. Like, I think they'd be okay if that's what they wanted to do and not have him on the active roster. Just have him on the practice. I think they'd be okay. But, you know, again, if he's QB2, then he's on the active roster.
Yeah.
And like you said, you can't – I'm sure the Titans would love to be able to flip that around and just go right to the practice squad, Malik Willis. They'd love that, but that obviously will not work.
Coming up next, you'll hear from Trey Wallace from Outkick. We discussed the Tennessee Vols and took a look around the SEC as well. Looking forward to that conversation coming up next. Kickoff week one with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up with promo code ROB to get in on the action, and you can turn game day into payday all season long. I really like the Titans in week one against the Giants. The Giants continue to have injury problems in the preseason, so that's probably the game that I'm looking at, but you take it any way you want to take it. Play your way and bet on more than just the final score. Wager on everything from touchdowns to total yards to catches. You can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. So don't fumble your chance to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, with promo code ROB. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Trey Wallace from Outkick. Trey, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. Doing good. Just getting closer to interesting slate of games on Saturday, I guess.
Yep, no, that's certainly one word for it. But college football season is upon us, thank God. So we've almost made it, Trey. Trey, I want to start on the Vols and specifically the Brew McCoy situation and his eligibility. Still no answer on that for the Vols as they're a week away now from their opening game against Ball State. How did we get to this point, and what sort of a resolution, if any, do you see for Brew McCoy as they move forward here?
I think you got to this point because you look at a player, you know, like Brew McCoy, who made the move over to Knoxville from USC, and you know, the NCAA looked at it, and USC kind of looked at it too, as you know, he made that pit stop in Austin, Texas. you know, before going back to USC. He only went there for the spring. And I think when we all know the one-time transfer rules that are out there and whatnot, and then you have graduate transfers, which is a completely different category. And now we're sitting here with Tennessee, where they're in a situation where, you know, they were looking for a little bit more help out of USC, I think, over the first couple months of summer, and that didn't come. And now you're in a predicament where we're sitting here Thursday morning, and the young man is not eligible. And talking with a bunch of people about this around the Southeastern Conference, compliance officials, there is a little bit of an understanding when it comes to, this form that each school has to sign off on, the no participation opportunity form. And Tennessee's in a spot right now where, yes, USC could have signed that piece of paper and then it all been done with it. And he'd have been immediately eligible and he could play. But NCAA is now looking into it because Tennessee had to go that route with their waiver process on this. And, the biggest thing about this whole situation is that they needed USC to cooperate with the waiver process. And I think, as of last weekend, I think USC finally started getting involved a little bit more when it comes to the waiver process for Brew McCoy. But, I think one of the misconceptions is, that Lincoln Riley has something to do with it. Lincoln Riley doesn't have anything to do with this. I think this is a USC administration problem. I think their counsel, has probably told them, hey, don't sign any type of documents if you don't feel comfortable. And then Tennessee looked at it as, okay, well, you guys told us that you guys are going to sign a document. We're not going to have to deal with all this mess. And he would be cleared and ready to go. So we sit here on a Thursday, and you know how the NCAA is. It's a waiting game. Could he be eligible, this afternoon here in 30 minutes, potentially? But now, they're having to go back and forth between two schools, USC and Tennessee, and now we sit in a little bit of a tricky spot.
Okay, so it's still as simple, Trey, as someone at USC signs this, and it's over. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, that's correct. Mike Bone, the AD, can sign that form, and it would be done. He would be eligible once they sent that over to all the correct parties. But there is language in that form, if you've read it, or maybe USC doesn't feel comfortable. Did he leave USC in good standing? Academically, was he in good standing when he left? I'm just throwing a couple of the clauses out there to you. So, there a little bit of me says, okay, I kind of understand what USC is doing by hoping the NCAA. Here's what it really comes down to, Joe. USC is hoping that the NCAA makes this decision real quick because then they can come out smelling really good out of this by saying, oh, well, we participated in the waiver process, so we're good to go on that front. That's pretty much what they're hoping for right now after kind of dragging their feet a little bit with this whole process from May to right now, I guess, yeah.
Okay, so if they do sign it, can this come back on them? Because of the language, like is there some sort of a potential ramification for them if what everything the form says is not accurate and they signed it?
I mean, yeah, and that's why you're seeing their general counsel is telling them not to sign it. So, I'll give you an example right now. The director of athletics, Mike Bone, has to sign this form, and one of the clauses in there is, was student athlete no longer given an opportunity to participate, practice, or compete by NCAA bylaws, or was not dismissed from the team or institution for any reason within the student athlete's control, was athletically eligible and in good standing with the team at the time of transfer. That number three, that one sticks out to me because Brew McCoy was suspended in 2021, but he was fighting with USC to guess either A, get eligible to play and get the suspension lifted, But also, there were no charges or anything along those lines. Nothing came of the Title IX. Nothing came of the legal situation when it comes to the criminal charges. So that's the argument that's being made over the last, 3 months with this in regards to him. And I think that we're cutting it a little bit close as the season draws closer.
Trey Wallace from Outkick on with us here on Robbie and Rex. So, Trey, that part of the discussion aside, we are a week away from Tennessee taking the field at this point. What sort of a team and sort of a group do you think Josh Heupel could have this year heading into his second year?
You know, I think offensively, I think you can see this team, take the next step. Look, it's going to be hard to replace a guy like Bayless Jones Jr. when it comes to special teams and what he did with the receiving corps. But I think offensively, I think they have enough tools around Hendon Hooker. I think with the backfield, Jabari Small, Jalen Wright, Ken Dillon Sampson, and Justin Williams, they'll take that next step as a freshman, and be somebody reliable. So offensive line-wise, I think they're in a good spot too. Like, this feels like a team that if they can get to the middle ground of their defense out of them, and I'm talking, get off the field, hold the team to, 24, 28 points, and somehow get after the quarterback. The biggest thing this year to me is let's see what Juwan Mitchell has at linebacker. Let's see what he really has once he gets in the game at Tennessee and he's free of any type of injury. At the moment, line him up besides Jeremy Banks and let them go. You look at the secondary, there's a couple, it's deep, but talent-wise, how deep is it? And I think that's going to be the big question for this year. And also, Robbie, depth along the defensive line is always key. And Rodney Gardner's trying to build that up. I think we all know that Tyler Barron and Byron Young are going to come off the edges, and Tennessee will be fine in that category, but it's about the interior defensive line and having enough bodies to get in and off the field when you're worn down, because Josh Heupel's not slowing down his offense for his defense. I think we all understand that and see that. So now you're in a spot, does Tim Banks' defense take the next step in 2022? I think that's the big question. But, to me, this is an 8-9 win football team. And if they upset somebody, you're sitting right at that 9 win mark. So, I just look at Tennessee overall as a group that is going to score a lot of points. Can't afford the injuries. Luckily, they have a backup quarterback in Joe Milton that at least has some experience, and what seems to be, in my opinion, is kind of stepped up his game from last year. So it's all going to be about what Josh Heupel does on offense, but the squad looks like they have some talent this year.
Our listeners are going to be very excited that you just brought up Joe Milton, Trey. I have already declared that he is Tennessee's starting quarterback for week one of next season, which a lot of people are just
Rex Rhodes' biggest fan, Trey.
That's the crazy part. Like, I think it's going to come down to, Tavon Jackson and Joe Milton. And to me, I don't know if Nico is going to be a starting quarterback, immediately. I'm sure the people that, cast chess probably hoping that he's the starting quarterback immediately. But, I think it could come down to where this kid actually played the smart game and could potentially, get behind-handed. I'm just saying I would put money in a pool with you, Joe, if you wanted to, and make that bet.
Say that the support is growing. I'm telling you, I think Mike Wilson is on this train too, so. Let's just keep it rolling down the tracks. I love it.
We'll do it. I'm sure you can complete the long ball now. We're good.
Yeah, no question about it. Trey, Tennessee aside, as you look at the SEC this year, obviously, Alabama and Georgia are the overwhelming favorites. Who do you think is the third best team in the SEC this year? Who do you think it ends up being at the end of the season?
Man, Jimbo Fisher's praying that it's them. It's tough for me. I think third best overall. It could be a tie between, Arkansas, A&M, in my opinion, for potentially third best. I want to see Kentucky. I want to see them prove it this year. Kentucky's got Kentucky's going to – that week two game against Florida, and they have to go down there without Chris Rodriguez. You know, that's intriguing to me because that could be somewhere where Florida is, you know, decent enough coming off that Utah game. Maybe you catch them slipping. You know, but overall, you know, it's time for it is time for Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M to be a team that's fighting. And I admit, look, I remember the COVID year. Okay, I do. But also, you know, this is a roster that shouldn't have four losses on the record like last season. You know, they win a big game and then they drop a game at Mississippi State at home. Like, I want to see some kind of consistency out of this quarterback room. I think last year it was thrown out of whack because James King went down. They had to roll with Zach Calzada, who honestly might be the third string quarterback at Auburn this year. So I look at Texas A&M and I think they can be that team. But then over there, I look at Arkansas and I look at their schedule and I look at KJ Jefferson. And, you know, the biggest component to me about Arkansas in 2022 was that they had Barry Odom return and Kendall Bras. You just don't see that a lot, especially Barry Odom and him running that defense, you know, with linebacker Bumper Pool. I just, you know, Arkansas is a team that I think is going to be hanging around the top 25 all season long. I think they're going to beat, you know, somebody maybe they're not supposed to this season. And look, they opened the season up with Cincinnati. I don't think that should be that big of a problem for them in Fayetteville, but it's all going to come down to that week four matchup in Texas A&M and Arkansas and Arlington and Jerry's World. Man, that could set up a crazy year in the SEC West. So I'm kind of looking right now at Arkansas, Texas A&M. Let's see what Kentucky can do.
Trey Wallace from Outkick, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Trey, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. Enjoy the first weekend of college football.
Absolutely. You as well. Trey Wallace, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are your racing station, 102.5, 106.3. The Game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Saturday at 5 o'clock for the Coke Zero Sugar 400. NASCAR on 102.5, 106.3. The Game is presented by the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe Rex Road, we are one day away. College football is back, and it's time to make some predictions. Vanderbilt in action tomorrow, taking on Hawaii. What are your expectations this year for this Vanderbilt football team as they embark on their journey in the second year of Clark Lea tomorrow?
Well, not for a lot of wins. You know, I actually did Tennessee and Vanderbilt predictions today at the Athletic.
Oh, boy.
I did best case and worst case. So, I did, you know, best case for Vanderbilt, I got to 7-5. So that would be Hawaii Saturday, Elon. Then you got Wake Forest coming in. Their quarterback's hurt. You got a trip to Northern Illinois. Good team, you know, lost a lot from a very good, but the MAC champion last year, that's a tough game. Could they win all of them? I mean, yeah. Three SEC wins, that's, again, we're talking absolute. So what are the even possible wins? I looked at Missouri. I looked at South Carolina. What the heck else did I look at now? Oh, Ole Miss. Yeah, I think they're going to be about 3-9 this year. You know, 4-8. Obviously, if they're 4-8, that means they double their win total from last year. I think it's more about for them being competitive more often, and even being like looking like they're playing the same sport when they play the top teams, right? And getting, you know, Mike Wright's a big part of, to me, this year. I mean, they've gone all in on him as quarterback. How does that pay off for them? Does he take a big step as a player? And then do you see young players? I mean, the last two recruiting classes, which is Clark Lee's quick put together class after Derek Mason, and then this last class, both in the 30s. You get in the 30s, Vanderbilt, consistently, you got a chance to be a lot more competitive than Derek Mason's stuff in the 50s and 60s. You know, and it's just, I mean, his recruiting classes eventually, you just saw, once you lose the really good quarterback and Kyle Shurmur, you saw how that you just can't sustain that in this league. So are any of those young guys going to make a difference this year? I think that'd be exciting for fans. Jaden McGowan, I mentioned him yesterday, receiver, you got to watch out for sure.
I've got Vanderbilt at 4-8 this year. I think they roll off 3 non-conference wins, and I think they get 1 conference win in there, and I've got them beating Missouri on the road. So I think they're going to take care of business tomorrow against Hawaii. Elon, they should win. I don't think they're going to beat Wake Forest, but I think they'll beat Northern Illinois. And then Missouri is the SEC team that I think they can sneak up and win. Honestly, given where they were last year, like 4-8, it's not going to get anybody excited, but I think 4-8 would signal some progress to me. And I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, one of your crossover games this year for Vanderbilt is Alabama. So that's a tough draw on the other side. You know, Ole Miss, I think, is going to be good. Georgia, obviously. South Carolina, I think, has got a lot of potential. The Florida game's interesting to me. Like, I still think Florida is way more talented than Vanderbilt is, but I just have no clue what Florida is going to be this year. So I'm interested to see how that one shakes out. But 4-8 is the number that I have with Vanderbilt. And I feel reasonably good about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good pick. Again, I went 3-9. I just had a hard time. Well, actually, I'm trying to think. I need to make sure that I'm accurate here with my. I think my 3-9 actually involved 2-2, and then the 1. I think that is right. And it probably is Missouri, right? Poor Missouri. Missouri fans hearing that their team is picked to lose to Vanderbilt. You know,
we probably just ensured a 35-point victory for Missouri.
And Missouri's interesting, too. Eli Drinkwitz is recruited really well. I did not pick Vanderbilt to win that game. I picked Vanderbilt to beat South Carolina. So, okay. And that's one of those, I don't know, Spencer Rattler. Shoot, he could be a revelation this year. And Shane Beamer, I mean, who knows? That program could be really interesting. They could be a problem for Tennessee, right?
For sure.
Potentially. But I'm kind of going off, obviously, last year Vanderbilt had that game won. Very different situation for South Carolina, but it was on the road. This one's at home. So, yeah, I think anything better than 4 wins for Vanderbilt this year would be pretty impressive. You know, like if they were to get to 5, that would be – and, of course, 5 could, in theory, even put you in a bowl game, depending on how many teams and – you know, like 5-7 could, in theory, get you in a bowl game, depending on how the rest of the picture shakes out. That would be impressive. Anything, I mean, 6-6 would be astounding. Like, if they get to my best case scenario record, 7-5, then is Clark Lee National Coach of the Year? He might be.
I mean, he very well might be at that point. I've got another SEC take for you. I don't know if this qualifies as a hot take or not, but I'm going to throw it out there to you anyway. By the time the season ends and you get to the SEC title game, both Alabama and Georgia will be 12-0. They will both be 12-0 heading into the SEC title game. I feel a lot better about Georgia's part of it than I do Alabama, even though I think Alabama's better this year.
Yeah.
Like, I look at Georgia's schedule.
It's so ridiculous.
They got Oregon to play in the first game. I think they're going to crush Oregon. Other than that, like, you go down through the schedule, it's pretty soft for the most part. I mean, their crossover opponent is Auburn this year, which I don't think Auburn's going to be very good, who they play every year, but also the other one is Mississippi State. So it was a pretty good draw there for Georgia, we think. I just, you know, they're going to have some tough games. Like, Kentucky should be a competitive game. You know, we'll see what Tennessee brings to the table against them. But I just think, I know they lost a lot on the defensive side of the ball. I think they'll be undefeated. Alabama, I think, is the best team in the country heading into this year. You know, they got A&M, they've got Arkansas, you know, the LSU. There's a lot of games that could sneak up and get them. You know, they play Texas in week two. But I think this is going to be a pretty darn good Alabama team. So I'm calling my shot, Rex Road. Alabama and Georgia are both undefeated in the SEC title game. And that means that both of them are going to the college football playoff again.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with that. I absolutely believe that that they're going to both be 12-0. Like you said, I think all of it. Alabama's better. Georgia's schedule is almost scandalously easy. There's some interesting couple Saturdays for Alabama, but you look at that team with what they bring back, what they did last year, how they continue to recruit. I think this could be, I don't want to say one of Saban's best teams because that is a big, big statement, but just the fact that you have maybe the best football player in America on the defensive side of the ball and the reigning Heisman winner and one of the top two quarterbacks in the country on the offensive side of the ball. Feel pretty good about that.
Feel pretty good. That's a pretty good starting point for this team. We'll save Tennessee stuff for next week as they head into their first game against Ball State coming up next Thursday. But got some interesting predictions for Tennessee to get to next week as well. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Joe Biscaglia from The Athletic. We'll take a look at the Buffalo Bills. Some interesting news on the Buffalo Bills over the course of the past 24 hours. We'll get to that with him coming up as well. It is fantasy football season. And my friends at Twin Peaks can hook you up for your fantasy football draft party, which includes a draft board, player stickers, free Wi-Fi, a $50 bonus for the commish, and a $5 bonus card for each drafter as well. And when you're not on the clock, relax with one of Twin Peaks' refreshing 29-degree beers, or order for the whole team with the Peak Sampler full of fan favorites, or indulge in shareables like the Double Stack Nachos, Loaded Fries, and multiple flavors of great boneless wings as well. Call Twin Peaks in Cool Springs to book your fantasy football draft party at 615-221-0869. Once again, that's 615-221-0869. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.